Thank you, Rick. First of all, a disclosure. Ordinarily, Dave Brown would be here preaching, given that he preached on Sunday on the theme and the passages we just had. But Dave's on leave for a week as he supports Finn, who's at a camp. And for those of you who have met Finn, will know that's quite a significant undertaking. So Dave just stays near at hand down at Victor Harbour. And hoping all being well, he can do some of his writing. So I'm using Dave's graphics, the pictures, the slides, but the text, the thoughts are all my own. But they're on very much the same page as how Dave approached it. We are following the readings as set by the church lectionary throughout January. And in those passages we've just heard, there are a lot of themes that we could highlight. And we've chosen to draw, in particular, some big picture themes that links the two passages together. The John reading itself talks a lot about the revelation of God through the person of Jesus. But the Jeremiah passage that we started with is speaking into a people who are, have been following a crisis in a very despairing space of being dispersed. Now let me just step back for a moment, and I wonder what some of our own recollections are of being aware of distance in some ways. Once there was a history of Australia written called The Tyranny of Distance, and a sense of being away from many, the mother country back in the UK, was a sense of being very aware of just how far away that seems, especially for those who literally sailed from another country to Australia, or those who journeyed by ship. The present generation is an incredibly connected generation. They are able to tune in to people right around the world at a flick of a button, or even just a touch of a screen, and can connect up in a variety of ways. And I suspect don't really have that sense of being distant from family and from friends, being dispersed. In my own recollection, broadly, I remember back in the day when ships would leave, not just for a cruise, but to take people on the other side of the world. As I was reflecting on this earlier in the week, I remember as a six-year-old, we left Auckland to go over to the UK, and I had a six-year-old moment, because you know how they had all the streamers? They would throw those big web of streamers, and there were so many streamers thrown, and would sing Auld Lang Syne, and it's a big moment to do it. And someone, and I still recall it quite vividly, had managed to tie together a whole row of stockings. I don't know how they managed to do it, with a ball on the end, threw the stockings over onto the boat. And I thought, it's going to pull the boat over. That stocking is so strong. So that's a six-year-old's eyes. But that was quite a moment, wasn't it? I'm thinking about my own mother, who came by ship from the UK, having met a young man from the colonies, from New Zealand, and married and was heading off to New Zealand. And I'm sure many others of us would recollect those were significant moments, because contact and distance was a thing. Back in the day when they had aerograms, I suspect younger generation wouldn't know what an aerogram is these days. And trying to keep in touch and moments to come together were really, really something. Even more so when it's come after a crisis. So, you know, to come over to the other side of the world for positive reasons, some come for the weather and for the opportunities, but when it comes as out of a sense of being an exile, out of devastation of some description, that is something different again. So on those occasions, where we gather together is something to really celebrate. Now, I know through Christmas, sometimes people travel in different areas, interstate or even overseas, to have those moments of catching up around the table. And that is something precious, to have some gatherings. I'll come back to that a little bit later. others are more traumatic. And these are two that Dave came up with. And I hadn't seen the first one, but at the first picture there on the top left is of the Nazis entering Paris after the defeat of the French and the agreement that they had, and just how distraught it was for that moment. Many had fled and others were just devastated at that moment. The picture that came to mind in my own thinking was General MacArthur's declaration on the fall of Singapore, you know, "I shall return." But that was a devastating moment and really struck deeply that life would not be the same again. And again, the corresponding positive picture of Charles de Gaulle, General de Gaulle, who maintained the opposition in exile when he eventually, upon the defeat of the Nazis in particular, strode under the Arc de Triomphe into Paris, and you know, that moment of being able to be restored into that space. This isn't just sort of factual history we roll out. This is powerful history. And it's something of that emotive quality that we see in the background of the first passage. This is actually, I think, from Ezekiel from memory, but I'll have to check from Dave. But having, after the destruction of Jerusalem and the scattering of the people upon the defeat by the Babylonians, the people who had been in Judea were scattered far and wide. And this verse describes them. "My sheep, God's covenant people, wandered over all the mountains and every high hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked for them." So the imagery of the people of God being a flock of sheep and of the leaders being a shepherd with responsibilities is very strong, especially in Ezekiel, and I think it's also a touch there in Jeremiah. We mention that because in John's Gospel, which is the second passage we have, Jesus didn't want the title king. There's one passage there in I think it's at the end of John 6, they said they wanted to come and make Jesus king, like a human king, and he would have nothing to do with it. When Jesus described himself in John, "I am the good shepherd." And it isn't just the image of the shepherd, it's actually picking up that whole sense of God's people need a shepherd to gather them together. "No one search for them or look for them" is a very sad notion, isn't it? To be scattered and feel as though, and no one even knows I'm here, except God does. And the reassurance comes is that God sees, hears, and responds, no matter where his people are. So that's the background behind that image of God gathering his people, having been isolated. Now, the picture we had earlier on of the sheep being following a shepherd from the ancient world is one that we could be, sort of imagine a little bit, but it's pretty hard for us to do so. But in the midst of the incredible connectivity of our generation, there's also a profound aloneness. People can be alone in a crowd. People can feel alone when they see others gather. I remember being caught on one stage. It was just one of those pictures that stayed in my mind. I had was waiting for someone to arrive from the international arrivals at Adelaide Airport, you know, that downstairs spot. And people would arrive and would be received. And I remember seeing one person walking through, a big beaming face and striding out, and then looking around. And after a minute of looking around, realised whoever was supposed to be there obviously had not turned up on time, and I was still there. And it just struck me that sense of being left behind a little bit. I'm sure they were picked up in due course, but that sense of aloneness is a profound feature of our contemporary world. Despite all the distractions and all the screens and all the things that come charging at us, a sense of being alone. It's in that context, that passage from Jeremiah. This is what the Lord says. Sing with joy for Jacob. The language for Jacob, by the way, is the same for Israel. You might remember that Jacob's name was changed to Israel. So it's another way of expressing God's covenant people. Shout for the foremost of the nations. Make your praises heard and say, O Lord, save your people, the remnant of Israel. So this is a God who is hearing and is gathering. This is another picture that Dave found and located. And again, it's quite an evocative one. You know the occasions when you're supposed to be picked up and whoever's picking you up either forgot or running late. You know, we all, I'm sure, have moments in our life, and maybe in our childhood we recall just sitting there, hoping, looking, waiting, and eventually coming. Again, it touches on a very real, deeper sense. You know, often there's a reasonable explanation as to why it happens, but it touches something deep in a sense of being alone. It's into that world that Jesus is sent by the Father. As the verse beforehand, and Rick very rightly picked it up, where our passage starts at verse 10, and it's actually helpful to have verse 9. The true light, that is to say Jesus, that gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. Now, in the sense of why Jesus entered the world, he is the light, he is the word, the logos, he is the working of God. But he's also, as we see and as John's gospel develops, the shepherd, the one who has come to gather the people and provide that protective, redeeming leadership that they were needing. That was the criticism that was made of the priests and the scribes and the Pharisees and others, is that you're failing to be shepherds, to provide that protection and that leadership. Yet Jesus came into the world, and actually once he came, a good number of people didn't want it because it was being disruptive. They wanted someone on their terms, perhaps someone to do their bidding. And that's not the type of shepherd, the type of leader that Jesus is. Which brings us full circle back to that picture of the Christmas table scene gathered together we had at the start. And we recognise that for some that's a very large table. I heard of some gatherings amongst our church family. I think 40 is the highest number I've heard so far. Some were saying we had 20, 25, and someone said, ah, we had 40. I said, I hope you had a family organising it for you. It was well organised. And some of them are very large gatherings, but not so for everyone. And there are some perhaps who like to have their own company, but it's nice when we are aware of the invitation isn't just to blood family and to extended relatives and others, but neighbours and others to be drawn into that company. That is what God is asking for of us, to be able to gather a community. And the Lord's Supper, Holy Communion, which we have week in and week out here, is a foretaste of our being invited and gathered to the Lord's table, not just the Christmas table, but the table of the kingdom, the table which comes with God's promises of hope. I will return, Jesus says. I'm coming. So it's around that table, right from the earliest days, the gospel took root as people were invited and accepted the invitation to come to the Lord's table and to join the company, to join the family of God, the profound family, as we gather together. Now, I'll finish with one little whimsical reflection. Just indulge me for this one. Many, many years ago, going about 3 decades at least, when we had changes to our church services, the biggest protest I had at the time was the greeting of peace. That was an introduction. You know, we had this new service and this thing called the greeting of peace, and said, oh, I'm not into the greeting of peace. And, you know, well, I'm not going to do it. And I remember at St. Matthew's when we introduced the greeting of peace, I'd actually been there, but I was reinforcing it. I had some people saying, oh, I'm not, you know, this is not Anglican or anything else. Of all the services where the greeting of peace is taken extraordinarily seriously, the Wednesday service is hard to get order back into the church because you rightly have embraced it, because it's recognizing we don't come as individuals to the Lord's table. We come as a family to the Lord's table. And a greeting, and especially a greeting that we come in peace with each other, is what God is asking of us. Those moments are profound expressions of what the gospel means by way of gathering us as God's people. So as we follow these readings, we can see one foundation. God is a God who gathers. That is the mission of God, is to see a gathering of people and community and others being drawn into and invited and welcomed and supported. May God in his grace and through his Spirit enable us to live up to that calling. Amen.